It's an honor to kick off a conference like this, and I would like to reiterate what the directors just said, thanking the organizers for putting this together, because it does demand a non-trivial amount of time, and I myself am contemplating doing something similar in the U.K. So any encouragement you have for me. Yeah, okay, right. Because there was a program for turbulence in 2008, and it's about time there was another one at the Isaac Newton. Anyway, enough of that. Let me also thank the organizers of this workshop for getting such a great bunch of people together. I'm really looking forward to the next week or so that I'm here. And I should probably push on to my talk now, because the clock is running. So this is the title of my talk, and really what I wanted to do was talk about some work that I've been doing with a graduate student and some collaborators at Cambridge under a joint EPSRC-funded project, all about stably stratified turbulence. And so this was a starting point that we wanted to take in that project. And really, this type should have stably stratified in it, but actually I can't resist also becoming unstable at some point, so I didn't put that in the title. Oh, how do I go down here? Ooh. That's not good, is it? Ah, click, that'll do. Right, so in some ways, I'm taking one of these gnarly problems. I've no idea who wrote this. Pedrag? You know, so when I read this, I thought, what the hell is gnarly? And yeah, it's very, very Southern Californian. It's surf talk for dangerous waves or something. And then also it's teen speak apparently in the US for excellent and disgusting at the same time. And you could actually substitute both of those words in there. But anyway, the reason I wanted to put this up is, why take a gnarly problem, plane co-op flow, and make it gnarlier? You know, because of course you're adding extra physics and potentially it's making it more difficult. But I'll try and indicate on, I just want to talk about three different problems. I'm going to talk about them quickly. I'm not going to give you all the details, so you have to ask me questions at the end, because I am aware there's 15 minutes of discussion. So this is the setup. This is plane co-op flow. Everybody in this room is probably familiar with it. I've used some really helpful coloring to indicate that I want the top plate to be hot, the bottom plate to be cold. This is, you know, I've got stable stratification in mind. These are the equations. And of course, the key thing that I want to take out of this is that there are now three non-dimensional parameters that we're dealing with here. There's a familiar Reynolds number. There's now something called a Richardson number, which measures how stratified it is. But I'll just say it's proportional to G. I'll come back to that. And the Prandtl number, the ratio of diffusivities. And rather than take off too much, I'm going to fix the Prandtl number throughout this talk to be either 1 in the first two parts or 0.7 in the second two parts. So really, my talk is all about what happens if you add this second controlling parameter to the problem. And I'll also make the comment that you can define a Rayleigh number, obviously, using this Richardson number, and that is the relation. So the Rayleigh number is only positive if the Richardson number is negative. We'll come back to that too. Right, so what's the effect of adding this extra non-dimensional parameter? Well, all of a sudden things get spread out over a bigger parameter space. So if this was plane co-op flow, you'd just be moving along this line. This is the Reynolds number. And you'd have the uniform shear case being the global attractor here. Then you go through some transition, and you'd be globally turbulent up here. And everything happens on this line, whereas now with two control parameters, all this transition is moved over lines or one-dimensional surfaces. And so everything is essentially radiating now, and I can talk about an asymptotic regime for these various different types of fluid flow. So, and the key question is, you know, this green line that I've just sort of sketched here, dividing lamina with turbulent, how does it behave as the Reynolds number becomes large? OK. Okay, that's a sort of key question, and you can. Have we got a pointer, by the way? Ah, that's it, yeah. Thank you. And of course here, you know, we're very familiar with crossing this green laminar turbulent boundary in this direction, but actually now you can ask yourself, well, what actually happens here? What's different if you were to look at this process here? Let me just say a little bit about this data. These red data points indicate a globally turbulent flow, so however big your boundary, your domain is, everything is turbulent, whereas these blue circles indicate spatially intermittent flows. And then this is a very small cartoon of essentially where you might want to divide these two regions. This is actually quite difficult to characterize. What I'm going to talk about in my remaining time is roughly down here, but I'll also try and address some asymptotics very briefly. Okay, so these are the three questions I want to talk about. Of course, if you've got a plane like this dividing laminar and turbulent flows, one of the key first questions is, well, where are my exact coherent structures in this plane? Do they exist in a larger section of phase space here, of parameter space, than the actual turbulent flow? I'm also going to talk about some well-known coherent structures in plane Couette flow and see what happens if you stratify them. That's brings some interesting things from pattern forming community in there. And then finally, I'll talk about something very different here, trying to control turbulent spots, which is a fine idea that John Taylor came up with, and we tried to run with a little bit. So, in terms of exact coherent structure existence, this is a redrawing of that parameter space. There's my Richardson number, here's my Reynolds number. This, you develop some criteria for how the flow is either turbulent or laminar based on the probability of finding an initial condition becoming turbulent. And this is the specifics that you come up with for two different domains. So this is quite a difficult boundary to pin down. It moves around a little bit. These are small domains at this stage. What it turns out, if you do edge tracking over here, is you don't really find any new states. You just find perturbed states from the unstratified problem. And the one that really just seems to dominate is this EQ7 that John Gibson found in 2009, and Itano and Generalis found and called it the hairpin vortex solution. And it's also called the mirror symmetric mode by Deguchi and Hall. So it's a very well-known state. And what's interesting is it survives to very high Richardson numbers. And when I say very high, you can see this is well above when the turbulence seems to not want to exist. And here's the equivalent boundary for Nagata's solution, his famous 1990 solution. By the way, is Nagata here?
No.
Okay. Right, and of course the key question here is, well, what happens to this boundary? I mean, you know, this is actually quite a lot of work just to get this boundary together. And you might want to know, well, what happens to this boundary? Because of course I'm showing turbulence existing up and over here. And then also, you know, if you were to take a typical Reynolds number and gradually move up the Richardson number, you know, are there various different regimes of exact coherent structures that you're going to encounter? And in fact, what you find is there are three regimes. So you find that the first regime, if you gradually increase the stratification, where the Richardson number scales as 1 over the Reynolds number squared, where stratification starts to affect the self-sustaining process or the vortex wave interaction. And in fact, this is none other than a Rayleigh number criteria. And just to give you some numbers here, and this is a simple model of a pipe. If this pipe has a diameter of 2 centimeters, then you only need a temperature difference across it of 0.06 degrees for this boundary to be met. So in other words, in a normal experiment, if your temperature control isn't so good, you actually will find stably stratified, modified exact coherent structures. You know, stratification is already important, even for this small temperature difference across your pipe. Okay, if you go up further, Richard's number up to Reynolds' number to minus 2/3, then you start to get a very different structure. I'll show you on the next overhead. And then it's not difficult to predict that this is going to be the final regime. And beyond this, you can't get exact coherent structures. So this immediately tells you that these boundaries up here have got to level off. Okay, I can't find Reynolds' number for every turbulence for every larger Richardson numbers. Eventually, there must be a turning over here, because all the coherent structures that we currently know about here, they stop existing at a certain order one value. So let me give you a little bit of an idea of what these states look like. So this is what the EQ7 looks like. You're probably all familiar with this. These are fast streaks, slow streaks. And you see there's a concentration of white arrows here. This is the critical layer, which is actually horizontal in this case, because this mode is steady. So the critical layer is just along y equals 0. And as you increase the Reynolds number, everything gets concentrated more and more into this critical layer in terms of the cross-stream velocities. And you just see this structure becoming more and more order 1. Now, as you increase in the Richardson number, what you find is things want to start localizing in the spanwise sense. So the flow is into the board. This is the spanwise direction Z or Z. And my plates are one up here, one up down here. So the stratification naturally wants to cause these structures to localize in the spanwise direction. But in this regime, in this intermediate regime, they do not localize in the streamwise direction. Okay, so that's the first finding. And in fact, this regime has been found already in the hydrodynamic unstratified literature. It's called the boundary-reduced equations. And these are the key references that you find. But they're only found if the spanwise wave number is taken larger and larger. Stratification automatically chooses this localization regardless of the spanwise wave number. And you can see what's happening is the stratification is imposing a heavier penalty on fluid going up and down. And this is what's essentially causing energy to be concentrated into these regimes. Now, if you go up to the top regime here, this is the unit Reynolds number Navier-Stokes equation. This is where essentially that you get no separation. And the length scales in every direction are order Reynolds number to the minus a half. So when you push that through the equations, there's no simplifications in Navier-Stokes. And everything becomes localized at the critical layer. Well, there's no real critical layer in this case. So the length scale in this direction is Reynolds number to the minus a half. In this direction, spanwise, is Reynolds number to the minus a half. And in the streamwise direction, Reynolds number to the minus a half. So this is a fully localized exact coherent structure. So this is what we expect up here, which is rather interesting, because potentially we're finding, you know, we're in this spatial-temporal regime here, where the turbulence hasn't reached global extent yet, these are the natural coherent structures that you find here. And just to emphasize the difference between the SSP-VWI regime and this boundary-reduced equation regime. This is the picture I showed you before, slightly different colors, apologies for that. And this is what the boundary reduced equations look like. You know, the state, you can see the localization in the spanwise direction. But now I'm looking down to show the streamwise variation. And this is entirely typical of SSP-VWI. There's very little variation in this asymptotically high Reynolds number in the streamwise direction. But as soon as you get to this boundary reduced regime, you find that you get order one variations in the streamwise sense. So it's very easy to recognize that. In the further regime over here, then this would even be more localized to get a fully localized state. But that, as you can imagine, is extremely hard to capture numerically because you've got localization three directions. So we haven't managed to capture that yet, but we can sort of see the writing on the wall. Okay, so this is the second part because I know I haven't got much time. Unstratified snakes. So this is a very famous picture, at least in my household. I show it to my girls all the time. of localized structures found in 2010 by Tobias Snyder and Bruno and John and a graduate student, I'm not sure what his first name, Daniel Marich. who did some edge tracking in the very large domain. And this is the global negative state that fits into this domain, and this is the localized state. I think this is the traveling wave, but I'm not sure. And you see this beautiful snaking as you continue it over Reynolds number and just some measure of what the solution is doing. Here's the dissipation. And the equilibrium solution goes off in that direction, and the traveling wave connects to this global solution. Of course, the interest here is it was the first, maybe, bifurcation where you could see how all these global solutions that people knew about could give rise to these localized solutions, which seem much more relevant for experiments. And of course, a lot of people subsequently have been looking for snaking as the generic mechanism for localization. And I think the jury's still out as to whether it is generic or not. Well, okay, so we wanted to come along and try and find these snakes using a completely different method. It's not edge tracking, but using energy growth optimization. Very simply, what you do is you look at a perturbation of a finite energy, and you develop an optimization problem which tries to find that disturbance which has the most energy growth over a fixed time horizon. And eventually, what you find if you gradually increase the energy of the initial disturbance is you latch onto a stable manifold of a nearby coherent structure, and then you'll tend to approach that coherent structure and then come back again. And if you can recognize this point here, you can then use that to converge this nearby exact coherent structure. And I talked about this in IPAM 2015, and there were a few raised eyebrows, because of course it was rather speculative at that point. Well, now we've actually managed to do it. What you find is that you can start off, this is my initial perturbation, which comes out of this optimization procedure, and it quickly grows in energy, and then you reach this plateau. And this plateau is the signature that you're near a coherent structure. And this is the evolution, and this is the coherent structure, or approximation thereof of it. So we took this and converged it to get a snake. So this is our initial guess. And you can see it's pretty close to what a snake wants to be. It just smooths out these ripples in the side. And then once you've got this, you can just retrace this. This is our version of this plot here, and you can see that we convinced ourselves that we really had found the snake and also its partner. Okay, so this, of course, is, and if I'd have been a little bit cleverer there, I would have kept the Reynolds number on there. This is the traditional snaking picture in dissipation versus Reynolds number. Of course, now we have an extra parameter, this Richardson number, so we can do the equivalent and say, well, okay, so these two states here, the blue states here, Reynolds number 180, we'll fix the Reynolds number and now just continue in the Richardson number. This is Richardson number 0, Reynolds number 180. Now I'm going to fix the Reynolds number and let the Richardson number do what it wants to do. And you get a picture like this. So these are the two states with Richardson number 0, Reynolds number 180. And you find the same sort of snaking picture here. Now, once you've got this far, it's unbelievably difficult not to turn your continuation software off. You've just got to let it go on. And when you do that, it goes to negative Richardson number, and it connects to very simple 2D roll solutions in the unstably stratified playing quet flow problem. So this is Rayleigh Bernard back here. So what we found is that these snake solutions just come up. Actually, there's a blow up here. They come off a nuggeter solution. This is a nuggeter solution. It's red dashed. And they just bifurcate off very, very soon after this initial bifurcation off the 2D rolls. So these are 2D, nuggeters 3D and global. And now this is 3D and starting to localize. And I'll just show you what happens here. If I can work out how to get that down there. Because I've got a video. If I can find it. Perfect. So this is one of these clever pictures that graduate students can do, but people like us can't. Where you put two pictures together, and you watch this blue dot, right? It's going to go across here, and you're going to see a state up in the top, indicating what the state's doing. Now, this blue line is the line where U equals 0, so it would be the mid-plane for the So I'll play it again in a minute. So you can see how it goes from a global solution, then it localizes, so this is now the snake there. And now we're going off, we're going to do, this is all stratification, the Reynolds number is the same now. Goes round. Yeah. Well, it's also the infinity, but it's just of fine scales. Now, what's interesting is you can see why this is not going to connect back onto a global state in my geometry. If I was to choose a slightly different geometry, I'm sure you wouldn't get this frustration here. And this will continue on. What I want to focus on, actually, is I want to go back to the beginning. I want to focus on this region here. You might not have caught what happened. Right, so now let me just see if I can... Oh, it slows down there, luckily. There. Right, now. So just before I get that kink, you'll see that the sides of this, this is the core of the localized structure, the sides, they seem to have the same height, right? They don't seem to be dying off. Whereas as soon as I go past this kink, you'll then start to see that the sides want to evanesce. And there's this change at precisely this point. What's causing this? Well, it turns out, and I'll just pull that back again. Right, let me do that again. So as you go around here, this is the same height, and then all of a sudden it starts to spatially evanesce. There's a crucial change here, and then this is just snaking tomfoolery around here. But this is rather interesting because it's sort of showing a transition, which you can easily explain, actually. So let me just quickly do that before I move on to my next. Okay, so we've seen that. We've seen my backup slide just in case my video didn't work. And this is the linear theory. Right, so focus on this side. This is the normal classic stability curve that you teach in undergraduate course, but it'd be graduate course now, where this will be the Rayleigh number going up here, and you get this U curve, and this is the preferred wavelength, which is 1.55 or whatever, and this is where you start to see instability here. The richest number is the reverse of the Rayleigh number. That's why everything's turned upside down. But it turns out that if you were to have the Richardson number up here, you can't have any global structure which is spatially periodic. You have to have something which is spatially evanescent. And you can make a prediction based on this linear theory. When you're far away from the core of your structure, things are getting smaller, and you can just look at the linear operator as John Gibson showed us in 2014. And you can predict what the tail should do. And I don't have time to go through that, so hopefully somebody will ask me a question about that. This is what happens at this kink. So now I've really focused in on here, and there's six wavelengths. So here's A. A is the other side of this. This is the global stability point, this dotted line. So this is when you expect to see instability in Rayleigh-Bernard convection with shear added. And over this side, the situation, the flow is linearly stable, and you can predict which is the least damped spatial decay, and then you can fit it to these tails. So this is just a very simple way of understanding how something can become spatially localized, just in terms of going from supercritical to subcritical based on the linear operator around the shear flow state. So I mention this because I think quite a few people will be talking about this, maybe today, Roman Grigorovich, and a few others. And it's actually quite a nice way of visualizing these systems. Right. Third thing I want to talk about. This is an idea that John Taylor had. I guess he was just messing around with some big domain calculations, and he thought, well, look, let me probe this boundary here. What shall I do? I'll take an initial state from a turbulent flow, this blue solid dot, And I'll put it into a simulation where I've changed the Richardson number to be just the other side or near this boundary. So, key thing to look at is you start off with a Richardson number of 0.02, which gives you a nice turbulent flow, and you use that as an initial condition going into a simulation which starts off with a Richardson number of 0.05. So this should be much more stable. And in fact, what happens is the turbulent kinetic energy gradually runs down, as you'd expect it would, as the flow relaminarizes. And these points here, A, B, C, and D, indicate how the flow gradually ebbs away. Okay, and I think it's the streamwise velocity that's being plotted here. Okay, so, and just to indicate, let me move this so I can put my pen. Yeah. This is a big geometry here, 64 by 2 by 32, quite large resolution. And here the Prandtl number is 0.7. Reynolds number is still quite small, but you can already see you've got lots of things going on here. So the idea was, well, look, why don't we try and use the Richardson number to control some of these structures? So we should start playing around with the Richardson number. Now, numerically, that's very easy to do. Experimentally, it's more challenging. I mean, you can imagine your... You can imagine your experiment in a lift, and you have complete control over your lift, and because the Richardson number is really just, what's that, 5? I'm so short-sighted, that like 20 minutes left. You can imagine your experiment in a lift, and you've got complete control over the gravitational field, and you could imagine that you are able to change your Richardson number. And so this is what John came up with. He said, well, why don't I add an extra equation to the Boussinesq system where I let my Richardson number be a function of time, and I use the turbulent kinetic energy as some barometer of what the flow is doing, and I use the Richardson number to try and maintain a certain level of turbulent kinetic energy. Can I catch some of these structures and control them? So let's just make a few comments here so you can understand this equation here. C equals 0, I just recover the Boussinesq equations, okay, because that term goes, and I just get the Richardson number is constant, and that's Boussinesq. If C is bigger than 0, then if the turbulent kinetic energy, let's say, decreases, then I want the Richardson number to decrease. In other words, I want the flow to become more unstable and catch that spot, say, from ebbing away. And similarly, if the turbulent kinetic energy increases, I want to make the system more stable. And so turns out this is the right way to do that. And then the other thing to bear in mind is C is small, then the Richardson number is slow to react to whatever's happening. So, okay, so let's turn that on. So this is my original slowly decaying turbulent state at Richardson number 0.05. And these are the points at which the control is turned on. So what's happening when you delay turning on the control? Is you're starting the control at a certain level of kinetic energy in your flow. And that, of course, will be determined by what structures are in your flow at that time. And what you find is you can catch the flow nicely. In other words, it won't relaminarize right down to this point D. But below that point, so in other words, at the minimum energy that you can catch the flow, where it won't relaminarize, whereas all these gray spots, E, F, and G, will relaminarize. And you can sort of see this over here in terms of what the Richardson's actually doing. Remember, this is now a function of time, so there's time, and this is what the Richardson number is doing. You'll see for A, B, C, D, that the Richardson number wants to stay up here, 0.05 or 0.055, whereas for these, which can't be caught, the Richardson number comes down here and actually goes negative. So in other words, it's putting energy into the flow. So what do you find after all these controls? So these are the four that you can capture. So A, you know, initially the energy is so large that you can just keep this lamellar turbulent bands that we might have seen of before. And then B, you start to see spot-like structures. And of course, what's happening here is you've just got more spots here than here. And eventually at D, if you remember, D was the last state at which you could possibly catch something. Here, this arrow, that's the last possible structure that you can save It's just a single spot. And I'll just recall that what's being plotted here is the streamwise velocity. So this is just one single spot. So what we've got here is just by using the Richardson number, you can actually stabilize a spot. Because depending on how aggressive you are, in other words, the size of your sea, you can keep this... you can keep a spot in play. And of course, here's another picture where you say, well, okay, well, actually, how small can I make sea? And of course, it's a payoff, because if you set C to zero, then the flow starts to really fluctuate. So this spot wants to divide into two, and then maybe it comes back to be one again. And so the turbulent kinetic energy fluctuates around like this if the control is not there. Whereas if you make the control really quite robust, then the turbulent kinetic energy is almost level. But then your control, this red line here to match this red line here, is, you know, being really very aggressive about affecting the flow. So what does this mean? Well, actually, it's non-trivial to try and understand what this means. Is this an edge state? Not clear for the original system. Is this a spot of the uncontrolled system? Not clear, but we'd hope it is. But what we're hoping is that we can use this controlled system to maybe try and extract some recurrent structures, and then use those to try and understand the uncontrolled system, which, of course, if you look at a spot, it's constantly evolving, and it's a transient system. Yes. Well, my last overhead.
All right, thank you, Rich. I'm glad I didn't have to wrestle you.
Yes, good.
I would have lost. Any questions? So, Bruno?
Very interesting work. I have a question about the relation to the Rayleigh-Benard studies of Kleber and Ose.
Yes.
Is this EQ7 state the state that they found, or is it a different one?
No, so that's a very good question, because Busser and Kleber, in a series of papers, 92 up to 2000, actually took Nagata's solution and worked it back to, let's get the relevant curve here. Oh, gone wrong way. Last. Which one am I looking for? This one, yeah, this will do. So these are the 2D roll solutions. And so basically, Kleber and Busser found this link. Nagata coming in and hitting these 2D rolls. And ditto this black one. So they did not look any further. They did not look for these. The EQ7 is highly symmetric in my parlance. So it has more symmetry than the Nagata solution by one. Okay. So they didn't know about these solutions.
All right. If I may follow this up with a brief one, you've mainly talked about positive Richardson numbers.
Yes.
How many of these solutions can you follow to the negative case, and how far? This is the unstable one, right? I mean, you're heating from below, and so you have the Rayleigh-Benard type thing, whereas
yes,
the negative Richardson number would be the stabilizing ones.
No, it's the opposite.
So what I did was basically take the plane correct flow solutions for zero Richardson number, and then also edge track over here, so positive Richardson number, find that essentially you don't find anything different. These are just regularly perturbed for small Richardson number. And then I continued them back over here to this is the Rayleigh-Benard problem with shear.
Okay.
And every state that I've looked at connects in one way or another with the 2D rolls.
Yeah, you have this extra minus when you relate Richardson number and Rayleigh number.
That's
this is
right.
What confused me. Thank
That's
you.
That's right.
Gerd Norbach is going to be the next one. I'm supposed to mention your name.
Rich, I was wondering, in terms of this picture, what do you know about the stability of the different states you're showing there?
Nothing. Life is just too short sometimes, Edgar. No, I'm afraid I don't. I don't know what happens with the stability as you go around here. That's an interesting question.
So they would like us to mention our names when you're asking a question and you receive the microphone. just say who you are. Let's go with Dwight.
Actually, Lorette and I, do we understand you to say that there's a Richardson number beyond which, independently of shear, you cannot get turbulence? Is that what you meant to say?
Okay, that would be, yes. So I think this is,
Can you repeat the question?
I have no proof.
Well, name and your name.
But this is,
I mean, Dwight Barclay.
So, okay, let me state exactly what I mean here. So all the structures that I've looked at, which are built on SSP VWI, okay, seem to have this last regime where the Richardson number can only scale like that with Reynolds number. So that means that they all must reach a horizontal here. So they can't exist. I can't choose an arbitrary Reynolds number and keep on going up like this. So these lines must turn around if I need ECS as precursors for the turbulence. Now, it doesn't preclude the possibility that there are states which exist only because I have very large Richardson number. Okay, so that's still a possibility. So I could have completely different, I haven't gone into that, but actually one of the motivations for looking at this problem is I wanted to try and see whether there are actually other states which were not built on VWI SSP thinking, because you have different wave systems now. You have internal gravity waves. And so I was rather hoping that I'd find a fresh set of waves. We haven't found that, and the reason being, I think, the Richardson number is not large enough in our studies. We are down here where the time scales were different. So there is the possibility that there are fresh waves up here, completely different sort of underlying dynamics that might have a different asymptote. But most people I think you talk to in the stratified turbulence community would imagine that this actually levels off. Has that answered your question?
Yes. I mean, you have curves above those
lines. Oh, yes, but I could have a different state, right, that asymptotes up here and is level. Okay. I've seen you do this in a talk about pipe flow. So here we go. Right? I've just chosen one here that levels off.
These are all steady states, right?
These are steady states, yeah.
So in that regime, you could expect some wave interaction states which would be non-steady. Right?
Well, it does. Whether they're steady or whether they've got a frequency, it doesn't affect. There's no difference.
The other states you're talking about.
Yes, that's right. So that would be completely different underlying dynamics, and that's what I was looking for, but you can't find them down here. You're going to have to go at much higher Reynolds numbers.
Do we have other questions?
Name and
state your name and your affiliation.
Okay, so Steve Tobias from the University of Leeds. Just a comment on that. I mean, given your scale, is Richardson number a quarter going to be important for these asymptotes?
Well, that is a question I have been asked before by at least one person who's sitting back in the room.
Did they state their name and affiliation?
I don't know. But, I mean, you'd hope. What will be magical is all these lines congregate at 0.25.
Yeah.
But I don't imagine that's going to happen. I mean, you know, life is not that simple, is it?
So can I ask my actual question? My actual question was, some of us are interested in Prandtl cases where the Prandtl number is small.
Yeah.
And I was interested in your control. Do you think your control variable, some problems that they scale, the important parameter is Richardson number times Prandtl number. So I was just wondering if you could.
Yeah, so okay, that's a very, very good question from the point of view. This is all for Prandtl number order one, fixed. So, you know, if you had a lot of energy, one could run off in a direction where you look at distinguished limits of Prandtl number and Reynolds number and Richardson number. Haven't done that. But there is a lot of, I didn't stress this right at the beginning, but there is a lot of potential for that because the scales here, right? So heated air, Prandtl number 0.7, goes all the way up to 700 salty water. So the Prandtl number does vary a lot, and also in astrophysical context. Yeah.
10 to the minus 5.
10 to the minus 5, yeah. So this is a rather terrestrially based study, but there's plenty. You know, as soon as you add two new parameters to a problem, you know, it becomes a very gnarly, gnarly problem.
Other questions?
Uh, I'm Ken Godeguchi from Monash University. So I've done a similar work as yours. And yes, I agree with your analysis. And there would be a...
So it's great one. To hear.
Yeah, so if the structure is very small and the size is comparable to Kolmogorov scale, we can only maintain the solution for order one Richardson number. This means that there's some constant value at the very large Richardson number where beyond which there's no coherent structures.
Yes.
And another comment is that the previous question, in the previous question, you asked about some threshold value of Richardson number equal to quarter, which is concerned in critical layer analysis. And we can also show that this case is only possible for small random number. Because basically we need to balance vortex equation and wave equations. And if we want to keep balance in vortex equation, we can only formulate the critical layer of Taylor-Goldstein type for small Prandtl number case. And for Taylor-Goldstein equation case, as you know, there's a threshold value of quarter, beyond which there is no unstable structure. So yeah, this is just a comment, but okay.
So can I just further? So when you say small Prandtl number, is one included in your small Prandtl numbers?
Square of Richardson number. You can show that the critical layer structure is of Taylor-Goldstein type.
So it could be order one. It could be order one then, because a Richardson number typically is order one.
Yeah, possibly, but I didn't show any exact solution, but yeah, possibly.
Okay.
But in your case, Prandtl number is one, so.
That's right.
One other question, maybe?
Yeah, Edgar Knobloch. I just wanted to make a remark. If you add rotation to Planck-Coued flow,
yes,
then Medzaleski, who worked with Tobias Schneider, has found a very similar transition from the snaking to the periodic
really?
States that you described today.
Right, because you get this linear instability yeah. point coming in. Yeah, yeah, but yeah.
You also have another parameter to play with.
So. Yeah, I mean, I didn't know how. Well known this was, this change from, I mean, it makes perfect sense, right? I just hadn't seen it, where you get these smaller and smaller oscillations, but they're spatially periodic, to then suddenly getting this decay. So, yeah, that's great. Okay.
All right, thank you very much, Rich.
Okay.